Welcome to Idle Chatter, brought to you by the Machinery Digest, where steel and soil meet. A weekly podcast by a New Jersey farmer to all farmers and ranchers across this great nation. And yes, there are farms in New Jersey. Regardless of the crop you grow or the livestock you raise, we all have one thing in common. Agriculture runs on passion, sweat, tears, and machinery, and that is why the Machinery Digest exists, a no-nonsense, grease-under-your-fingernails educational website. It was created to provide a transfer of knowledge so that you can maintain, service, and most importantly, understand today's complex farm equipment. My name is Ray Bohax, and I farm too. It is time now to get under the sheet metal. Hello, my friends, and welcome back to Idle Chatter, the first full real podcast of 2020, right? 2020. I did the, on New Year's Day, I launched my special podcast, which was my wishes and prayers for your success in 2020. But this is the first real one, I guess, right? Complete back to normal podcast. So, hopefully you had a great holiday, great Christmas, great New Year's, and you're hitting the ground running, excited about 2020 and the prospects that it holds. And 2019 is behind us, good, bad, or indifferent. And I know that for so many people, it was a challenging year in many, many ways. And but for others, like anything in life, others had a great year. So the ones that had a great year want to remember it, and the ones that had a bad year want to forget it. But I guess that's why they call it life, right? But hey, you know, what's exciting to me, not only the promises of the new year, but I love this time of year because there's so much learning sessions going on. There's so many workshops, or I know some guys call them, certain parts of the country call grower meetings. But there's a lot of activity going on as far as that's concerned. And I'm looking forward to attending a class later this week, and then one next week. And then there is a quite a large dealer group in Pennsylvania called Mezix. They have four or five dealerships. They're Case, IH, and New Holland dealers. And they also sell Kubota and a full line of short line equipment. But anyway, they have their open house. And I usually attend their open house. They have a six-day open house, and they have different seminars each day and different things going on. So one year I did actually made an itinerary and went 5 days, I believe, to it. So I went five different times. But the thing is, I need to add to this, because some of you may be saying, well, that's no big deal, right? You rode into town five times. Well, no, it is a big deal, because when you farm in New Jersey, there's really nothing of any magnitude or any consequence, I should say, going on here. So you either have to go to Pennsylvania, you have to go to New York State, you have to go to Delaware. Delaware is a little bit of a reach because I have to go through South Jersey, go to Delaware. But you have to go someplace other than here. So in essence, to go to those Mezix seminars, it's depending on the way I go, it's anywhere between 178 and 188 miles one way. So it's the better part of a, you know, 360, 380 mile day. And since they start early in the morning, because they're for local people, right? Not this hot rod farmer coming from New Jersey. Since they start early in the morning, that means you're on the road at 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the morning. I get up at between 4 and 4:15 every day, but you know, I have to get dressed and get going and take care of my chickens. So it's a little bit of a challenge. But you know, to me, education is such a wonderful blessing, such a wonderful gift. And I never have been afraid in my whole life in the automobile industry, in my agricultural life, to travel for education. And I have to chuckle, because if you get out into what I call real farm country, not that over here is not real farms, but where agriculture is you know, a predominant industry out in the Great Plains and the Midwest and what have you, you know, you talk to some of these guys and, you know, they're complaining if they have to go 10 or 15 miles to take a class or to do something. And And if you have to, if they have to go 100 miles, one guy said to me, I went 100 miles to this. I said, 100 miles? I said, I've gone all the way up to South Dakota to the Ag PhD guys four or five times. That's 4,000 miles, better part of 4,000 miles round trip. So you're not going to get any sympathy from me for 100 miles. But anyway, looking forward to doing that, and hopefully you have some meetings and some learning sessions planned to attend during the next couple of months, right? The time between January and the time we get back in the field. So that is that, and let me see what else I want to tell you. I'm moving forward with all my plans, trying to get some guests of quality to be featured with the On the Road with Idle Chatter special podcast, and hitting some obstacles. I said a week or two ago about that, but we will push our way through those obstacles. The thing is that I am a pain in the neck, so I want to be able to tour someone's facility, someone's company. And then I don't want to do telephone interviews. This is not even going to be an interview. I want to tour somebody's company and then sit down and record a podcast and ask intelligent questions about their equipment, their procedure, whatever they're manufacturing, whatever they're doing. And I need to get someone that is very knowledgeable and not just a marketing PR guy. So that is becoming, as I said, a little bit of a challenge. But hey, if it wasn't, if it was easy, I guess everyone would do it. So let me see, nothing else I wanted to tell you. It snowed a little bit this morning, if anybody cares. And I also want to do as an aside to this, I noted that the people in Australia have just devastating wildfires going on. I'm sure you're all cognizant of that. You don't need me to tell you that. But I know that we're sending some firefighters here from the States. I don't know what states they're going from. And they may be even some from New Jersey, because believe it or not, we do have quite a dynamic forest fire department here, a department or association, whatever you'd want to call it. I don't know if that's a proper term. But the devastating loss in Australia is basically just burning up. And I ask you to please keep those people out there, or over there, wherever it may be where you're from, in your prayers and thoughts, and also keep all of the livestock and all the wild animals. I mean, I've read reports that there's actually billions with a B of wild animals that have been killed in these brush fires. So it's just, the place is just burning up. So our thoughts and prayers. I know to my Australian and New Zealand listeners, I honestly don't. I'm naive to the geography, and I know Australia and New Zealand are two different places, but I kind of look at them as like Canada and the United States, that they're like sister countries, and that may be wrong. And if that is wrong, I don't mean any disrespect, but I just know you guys are having a heck of a time out there, and it's been going on for a number of years, and it's no joke. And know that many people here in these states are praying for you, and hoping that the good Lord brings you some change, much needed change in weather, some good soaking rains to put that out and get a little bit cooler weather and all the things that need to happen. So just know that we are with you. And I know that we are sending, as far as the United States is concerned, we are sending some help there. And I'm proud and glad that we are. So let me get back to today's show and some more positive things, right? Well, today's show is going to be about idle quality. And you might say, man, I'm not interested in idle quality. Well, you should be interested in it, right? Because as you'll see as we get into the show, that idle quality is very, very important. And it's also a barometer of engine health and how efficient an engine is running and how reliable it will be. So it is, you know, just like you look at crops. I mean, you could say, the color of the crop, the strength of the stand of the crop is all an indicator of how it will yield. And idle quality is also an indicator of how that engine will yield. And yield meaning how it's going to perform, how it's going to last, how it's going to be fuel efficient, what have you. So hopefully you think that after you listen to it, that you start to listen with an open mind. That's all I ever ask you, is to have an open mind, because some of the topics you may say, I'm not interested in that, and then shut the podcast off. And if you do that, obviously that's your prerogative, and I have no, I can't do anything about it, but please know that I am not here to waste my time, and my sincerest prayer is to be able to help people in all aspects of agriculture to make their operations more efficient. And believe it or not, idle quality is one of those, and maybe further down on the list, but as we get into that part of the show, you will see that it is quite important and also makes an engine very enjoyable. And that's something that, you know, that an intangible that we can't, really put a number on, right? Put a number on, in other words, to qualify and say, well, hey, you know, this is what it's all about. But all right, let me move on before I keep talking in circles here. But it is now time for Bushels and Cents. And, the purpose of Bushels and Cents, as you know, it's a new segment in the show, is I want to drive home the message that success on the farm or ranch is a three-legged stool: agronomy, marketing, and machinery. The best way is to establish how a poor decision or inaccurate diagnosis of a machinery issue costs your operation money. But instead of referencing just dollars, I will reference it in crop. Corn at $3.50 a bushel. And never forget, it is not what you make, but what you keep that counts. Alrighty? So that's the canned intro. So now we have our Bushels and Cents segment. Other than changing the cabin air filter, you never have the AC system on your tractor discharged, evacuated, and refilled with refrigerant. Now the system stops working because the refrigerant and moisture turned to acid and destroyed the compressor, accumulator, and other parts. The repair bill is $4,000, and that's not a number I'm pulling out of the air. That's very, very possible, excuse me, that you could get to that part, that higher number, or possibly even more, on a big piece of equipment. So the repair bill is $4,000, or the equivalent of 1,143 bushels of corn, because you did not want to spend $200 every 3 or 4 years to service the unit. Let this not be you. So think about that. Think about that as far as your air conditioning. And now keep in mind also, I mean, that's to just extrapolate this out. It's very possible, and God forbid that it happens, but if you have a bigger operation, and you have, two tractors, you have a sprayer, you have at least one combine or maybe multiple combines, you have some farm trucks, you have whatever, and on a road vehicle, you could get away without the air conditioning. It's maybe not going to be as comfortable, but a lot of these tractors and these, you know, the sprayers and the actual agricultural machinery, it needs the air conditioning because you have this closed cab, you have a greenhouse effect in there. There's no real air movement. There could be a lot of dust and chaff, or chaff from the dust from harvesting with a combine, or you're spraying with a sprayer, you breathe it in. So you really need the air conditioning. It becomes like an office building. It becomes an essential element of the piece of equipment. It's not a luxury as it would be in a pickup truck or car. But to get back to my point, you could very conceivably have two or three air conditioner units fail, God forbid, within a year or two, and you're spending $2,000 to $4,000, maybe even more, to repair them. That it by changing the refrigerant, by discharging, pulling a vacuum and filling the unit up with new refrigerant, it's like changing the oil on an engine. Is that what's happening? You're getting that moisture out, and when moisture mixes with refrigerant, it creates acid, and then it eats everything in the system and destroys it. And the system basically just grenades and puts metal through everything, orifice, valve, tubes, what have you. So it's not pretty. So you keep that in mind, that I don't want you to have a failure. You have three pertinent AC units go down in 1 year, or one or two, whatever. But that can happen. So, as I said, think about it and move to action, right? That's the biggest thing in life. You know, you could learn something, you could know about something, but if you don't move to action, what the heck good is it? It's useless. I mean, so many times in life I see people that are cognizant of something, but how am I going to do it? And they don't do what they're supposed to do, be it with their machinery, be it with their farm, be it with their life, be it with their health, and they don't do what they're supposed to do. And even though, ignorance is one thing, or a lack of knowledge, if you said, geez, man, I didn't know I was supposed to do that. I didn't know I was supposed to brush my teeth. Nobody ever told me I was supposed to brush my teeth. But if you know you're supposed to brush your teeth and you don't do it, and then you have a whole issue, medical, dental issues in your mouth. I was looking for a different word. And then the thing basically is that's your own fault. Shame on you. And that's the whole purpose of my show and my website, is to educate you to be able to, and then you make the decision. If you say, hey, to hell with Ray, I'm not going to do that. To heck with him. No, I don't believe in doing that. I'm not changing the oil. I'm not changing service in my air conditioner. I'm not putting the additive in my diesel fuel. I'm not going to fluid test. I'm buying a tractor without fluid tester. To hell with him. He doesn't know what he's talking about. I saw a tractor that looks good. It's nice and shiny. You're right. Hey, God bless you. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So I'm hoping that slowly I could turn this around for you guys and have you change your thought process and then move to action with the things that you learn. And do the same thing with agronomy. Do the same thing with your business. You go to the tax man, your accountant tells you, hey, you should do this or do this or itemize this or deduct this or don't do this or don't buy that or what have you. And what the heck is use of paying somebody for advice if you're not going to take it? And I'm also not saying that everybody's advice is wonderful. So you have to sift through that. But if you just are the type of person, and I did a show about that a while back, about that most people in any walk of life, in any business, are the largest obstacle to their own success. They want to blame everybody else, but when the dust settles at the end of the day, you can control your thoughts, you can control your actions, you can control your savings, your purchases, and most people are the largest obstacle to their own success. And hopefully that doesn't happen to you. And don't feel badly, because I'm not chastising you, because I'm the largest obstacle to my own success also. That's human nature, and it's a full-time job to try to not fall into that obstacle pitfall, to change your ways and to look at something and have self-examination and look and say, hey, man, am I really doing this right? Or am I not doing this right? And, that we did that on our farm. When my dad was alive, he was very, very, God bless his soul. He didn't, he didn't use the term, we never did it that way. But his actions were that way. Well, we did it this way, and this is the way we're doing it, and we're not interested in exploring anything. And, the thing in life is, I'm not saying you embrace everything that's new that comes down the pike, but you owe it to yourself, you owe it to your farm, you owe it to your business, you owe it to your family to explore those possibilities and look at them and see if they're a proper fit for you. I mean, they may be a proper fit, but they may be out of your budget. You know what I'm saying? Well, what have you? But everything has to be looked at in a case-by-case, as a case-by-case examination or example. But my dad didn't want to change anything. And we were moldboard plowing. I've said to you guys before, and we had we weren't soil testing. And we did soil test the people we were using to supply our fertilizer and what have you, whatever. I don't know. They didn't give us the proper recommendations because we spent a lot of money and we never did anything to fix our soil. And we were told that just the way it is, that our soil is that way and what have you. And I found that hard to believe. And I went on a quest. I didn't know anything, but I went on a quest to believe. It would be like saying that every tire leaks. You got a leaky, you got a slow leak on a tire. Don't worry about it. All tires leak. And then you say to yourself, well, if you apply some common sense, I'd say, well, not all tires leak or leak to the level that I have to put air in it once a week. Maybe every 2 months I have to put air in it. So I went on a quest to try to fix our farm. And it took me a number of years. And then my dad got sick at non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, not from Roundup, as the TV says, but he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. My aunt had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma also. She lives in New York City. She never saw a bottle of Roundup in her life. But anyway, I guess it just runs in my family. But anyway, then he passed away, and I had the opportunity to be able to start to change things. and not have to fight with them. And, you know, when you have that internal fighting in a family, it's never any good. And but then my father was famous for that. I mean, I remember when I bought a new tractor for the farm in 2002, a new Holland tractor, I should say, a new blue tractor that comes across, but a new Holland. And I paid for it. I mean, so it wasn't like I was giving him the bill for it. I paid for it. And when the tractor was delivered to the farm, he wouldn't talk to me for 2 weeks. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, God rest his soul. It was my dad. I loved him. He was far be it from perfect. But he wouldn't talk to me. We don't need a new tractor. The old tractor is fine. I said to him, Dad, if I'm going to be farming this, I can't be farming with old equipment. I'm not going to say junk, but old equipment. And I have to have something that's more reliable and has more features on it, more ability, not necessarily creature comfort features, but more ability. And he didn't want to hear it. The dealer brought the tractor here in a rollback, rolled it off. He saw it, he went in the house, and that was basically it for 2 weeks. He didn't want to talk to me for 2 weeks because I bought a new tractor with my own money. So, hey, whatever. I'm sure we all have those situations, but they're just counterproductive. And they're counterproductive. And the thing is that, you know, you have to have self-examination. You have to look at your business, and you have to look at your equipment. You have to look at your yields. You have to look at what you're doing. And you know, maybe you will look at it and say, hey, I'm doing it great. I'm doing it right. I'm doing it the best I can. But most times you will find that you can do it better. And that is going to lead up to our topic today of idle quality. And, you know, most likely you could probably get it to idle better. So, we will discuss that. But I want to start with a story that I may have shared a year or so ago on the podcast, but I'll I ask you to please forgive me and just entertain me for a minute or so as I tell a story. When I had my first shop in Hackettstown, repair shop, and specialized in what they call drivability issues, fuel injection issues, basically the way the engine starts and check engine lights. These are called computer work back years ago, but check engine lights, service engine soon lights, emission things, what have you. I had a woman came to me with a Buick LeSabre. So this was quite some time ago. They don't make LeSabres anymore. But anyway, it was a Buick LeSabre with a 3800 V6 in it. She was probably a middle-aged woman at the time. She was older than I was, and I don't think she ever married or anything, that's really not an important part of the story, but it is an element in the story, because she was very, very, very afraid of breaking down, and that's why I said I don't think that she had anybody in her life, and she was very, very paranoid about breaking down. And then what would happen is that on a lot of General Motors fuel injection systems of that era, if the throttle plates were not adjusted properly and they were dirty, and I did a show on drive-by-wire where I discussed that, and something called an idle air control motor that was a compensator for the throttle for load on the engine, if that would got dirty, and it got dirty, the throttle plates and the idle air control motor got dirty due to the EGR valve and just carbon in the motor. So it wasn't a design flaw. Is that they would put EGR, they would introduce exhaust gas recirculation right behind the throttle plate. So on the reversion, the overlap of the cam, it would push some of the exhaust gas backwards, and over time would dirty up the throttle plates and dirty up the idle air control motor, which was a stepper motor. I did a podcast about stepper motors and relays and everything a few weeks back, but a month or so ago. But anyway, it was a stepper motor, so it needed to be clean to be able to respond properly. And you needed to have the throttle angle set properly so there was not too much authority given to the idle air control motor to keep the engine running under a D-cell situation. A D-cell situation meaning that, you're in town, you're driving, and you lift your foot off the throttle, and you're rolling up to a stop sign or a traffic light or making a turn at the right angle turn from one road to another. So what would happen is that if that dynamics were wrong, or they were dirty, that plates were dirty in the idle air control, is that the engine would have a propensity to stall. It would stall, and you turn the key, vroom, and it would start right back up and drive. So this Buick had that problem of stalling, which was very, very, very simple to fix. I cleaned the fuel injectors on it, and I would go through, and I would set what was called the minimum air rate, the minimum throttle angle, and then the throttle position sensor, clean the throttle plates and the idle air control, and the thing would run like a baby. Well, what happened was that I did that, and those Buick 3800 engines were, if you set them up properly, they were, I mean, you could not hear them run. They ran, they idled slow and smooth. And that's what we're going to discuss today, slow and smooth. But they ran slow and smooth. But this woman was well convinced, because it was idling so smoothly and so slowly, that she was well convinced that it was stalled. And she'd keep hitting the key. And she brought the car back to me and she says, it's stalling, it's stalling. I said, how can it be stalling? So I said, let's go for a ride. Let's see if we can make it stall. And I did everything I could to try to make it stall. And I'd come, you know, I'd jump on it, get out of the throttle, you know, hit the brakes harder or what have you. I told her I'm going to be doing this to try to evoke a stall. And then I said, I can't get it to stall. And then I said, you drive it, because who the heck knows what she was doing to it, right? But anyway, would drive. She said, it stalled. I said, it didn't stall. I said, look, none of the Indian lights are lit up. It was running so smoothly and so slowly and smoothly and perfectly, as it should have, instead of being that this actually spooked her, and she ended up selling the car. It was only a couple-year-old car, gorgeous car, and she ended up selling it because she was well convinced that when it ran so smooth that it was going to, that it either stalled or it didn't stall, or it was on the verge of stalling, but not, that was not the case. So what I'm going to do is we're going to go through quickly here, and we're going to talk about idle quality. Now, there's a difference between a rough idle and idle instability. A rough idle is when you actually feel the engine shaking, or it's rough, right? But we'll say you could feel it shaking or quivering, and that is what the industry calls a rough idle, while idle instability is a surge or a roll. So you could basically have an engine that's running smoothly, all right, and the RPM is surging 50 or 100 RPM, like that. That's idle instability. That's not a rough idle. So we're going to be talking about a rough idle today. And, you know, just like if you were to go into your field, and I always make references to corn because I'm a corn farmer, sweet corn guy. And the thing is that, you know, a picket fence stand of corn is a badge of honor. And it's, you know, and when you're working on any type of engine, I don't care whether it's a diesel, gasoline, whether it's a one-cylinder engine on a seed tender or on a pressure washer or a lawn tractor, what have you, you know, just like that badge of honor that the picket fence stand and even emergence, right? Today in agriculture, we're recognizing to a certain extent that how quickly and how evenly the corn plant or the plant emerges from the ground is going to help make it yield, because there's not going to be so much competition between them. Some people go crazy and say they got to merge within an hour or two. I've never had that. I've never was successful with that, but whatever. But even emergence that you come in the field and they're all basically the same height, and that picket fence stand, there's no holes in the stand. Well, when you're working on engine, and I'm repeating it, any engine, I don't care what it is, a smooth and slow idle is that same badge of honor as even emergence and a picket fence stand. And just as you are looking for that in your field as far as yield is concerned, you're going to be looking for that on your engines, because it is going to be a telltale. It's going to be a qualifier of an engine that's mechanically sound, that's going to be reliable as far as that aspect of it is concerned. Doesn't mean the water pump can't go, all right, and it's going to be the most efficient and last the longest. And that, and just like, so that is the yield of an engine, right? And if you have to have a high idle speed to smooth it out, I mean, anybody could have a good idle at 2000 RPM or 1500 RPM. So you have to have a high idle speed to smooth it out, then that is just a band-aid. So the idle speed screw on any application, whether it's a diesel, whether it's a gasoline engine, whether it's carbureted, whether it's fuel injected, if it needs to be idling excessively high to get a smooth idle, then that basically in essence is truly a problem, and it's an indicator of something that is not right, and it's also is the indicator of a poor mechanic. So what I want to do is I want to discuss quickly the reasons for a poor idle quality, and I'm going to talk about gas engines first. Too lean. If the mixture is too lean, it's going to be a lean misfire. and that is either caused by fuel delivery or a vacuum leak someplace in the system. And what a lean misfire is there's not enough fuel in the combustion chamber to propagate the flame front. So the flame will start to go across the bore, and then the fuel and air molecules, air which is oxygen and nitrogen, air molecules are too far apart, and the flame actually dies out and cannot propagate, go completely across the bore. Because as the flame goes across the bore, it expands, and that's what pushes down the piston. So why would it be a rough idle with too lean a mixture? Is because what's happening is that instead of having a nice even push, right, as the flame expands and drives the piston down, you're gonna have a jerky movement inside the cylinder as far as the pressure rise is concerned. It's gonna start the flame and come down. So the speed of the piston is going to slow down. It's still going to be working on inertia, but it's going to slow down, and that's going to make the engine idle rough. And then what usually happens is that you could have a misfire on one cylinder and then on another cylinder. And then when that lean misfire happens on the one cylinder, that piston is not pushing equally, evenly. It would be like a seed meter, right? A seed meter, if it's smooth, 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 and then hits a spot where the gears or something is binding, or then and it doesn't drop a seed there, or drops two seeds, and that's its misfire. That's its roughness. So if an engine is too lean, it will induce what's called a lean misfire, and it will affect idle quality. Conversely, it's very hard, not impossible, but it's very hard if the mixture is too rich to induce a truly rough idle. You will start to lose some idle quality, right? But it is much easier to have, or it's more common is the best way for me to say it, to have a lean condition cause a rough idle. Right now, if the engine is lean and it's lean on that piston, you know, getting back to like bushels and cents logic, and you put a load on it, it's got a vacuum leak, you got a grain truck, old gasoline grain truck, you put a load on it, that cylinder's lean, it could go so lean that it actually takes a ring land off the piston and hurts the engine, which would then need to be completely rebuilt or junked. So as I said, is that lean, the idle quality of an engine is an indicator of its health in many, many ways. Not in all ways, but many, many ways. But one of the problems with being lean is that anytime that you have a rough idle, it could be broken down to this one statement: cylinder to cylinder mixture variation. And then if you have a fuel-related rough idle, it's because, let me add that to it, cylinder-to-cylinder mixture variation. And this could be from distribution issues, meaning that each cylinder is not getting the same amount of fuel. All right, why can that be? That if it's an injected motor, it could be because of a problem with a fuel injector on one or two cylinders. It could be a distribution problem in the manifold. It could be carbon in the manifold. It could be a vacuum leak that is only common to that one cylinder, or it could be a vacuum leak that is common to many, many cylinders. Let's say you have a power brake booster hose that's leaking. Well, that's usually pulled from the plenum. All right, so if you have an air leak there, it's going to affect all the cylinders. But due to the dynamics of the intake manifold, then you will have less of an impact on some cylinders and more of an impact on others. But one of the main causes for a rough idle is cylinder-to-cylinder mixture variations. All right, and then that is why I tell you, when you're working on an engine, go around, and I don't care what kind of engine it is, snug up the carburetor bolts, throttle body bolts, air intake bolts, go around, and if possible, snug up all of the intake manifold to cylinder head bolts. You don't have to bust them. You put a wrench on it. I know some of them are hard to get, but if you go around and you see if this, let's say there's 12 bolts holding the manifold to the cylinder heads, and you know 9 or 10 of them are very, very tight, all right, and you can't get to one of them, I'm not saying rip the motor apart to get to it, but it's a pretty good indicator. But go around and put a wrench in there and snug them, and even if it only takes a half a turn, that means that gasket has been relaxed with that manifold, and it's very possible that it's introducing an air leak on one or two cylinders, right? Another reason for a rough idle on an engine is cylinder timing variations. Now, if you have timing variations, so each, you know, basically, in essence, akin to just back up a little bit to clarify this a little more, is that, and just like we said in the beginning, you know, even emergence, the whole goal today on a crop is to have even emergence, corn, soybean, wheat, whatever, you want it all to come up out of the ground at the same time. Well, what's going to happen is that on an engine, and on a multi-cylinder engine, you need to have everything happen at the same time for that engine and be equal at the same time. So if you're planting in your planter and you're going on, and you're going into this part of the field, or you're going down a row, and this seed is an inch and a half, this one is inch and three quarters, this one is 2 inches, this one is two and a quarter, well, you're not really going to have even emergence. If this one, you have the closing wheel covers it well, this one, you go and you impact the sidewall on it, you're going to have variations for each seed, for each row. And that's basically what's happening with an engine, and the end result is not about emergence on an engine, it's a rough idle, all right? And the thing is that you need to have the timing, the fuel delivery on each cylinder to be the same. You need to have the ignition timing on each cylinder to be the same. And timing variations are usually on a gasoline motor, are usually caused by a worn distributor bushing or worn distributor gear or a stretched timing chain on engines that have a timing chain. So if you have a worn distributor bushing, what's going to happen is that distributor is going to be moving around inside the bushing. And if it has breaker points or if it has electronic ignition, it has some sort of pole piece, something that's going to be the interrupt to charge, to turn the charging of the ignition coil on and shutting it off. It's going to be happening at a different time. Time meaning in that time meaning clock time, but rotational time, degrees of rotation of that piston, all right, and where that piston is in the bore. So it's going to be moving all around because of that worn bushing. And it's very, very common. So if you put a timing light on it, you'll see the timing bouncing around all over the place. All right. And that will give you a rough idle, because why? This cylinder is firing at 10 degrees before top dead center. The next one in the firing order is firing at top dead center. The next one is firing 2 degrees after top dead center. And the next one is firing at 12 degrees before top dead center. So you're not going to have uniform right emergence. You're not going to have a uniform running of the engine because of the timing variations. Another thing that comes into play, which is very common, is fuel injector fouling. That's meaning that the spray pattern or response time is not proper, or is skewing is probably the better word. Now, if you look at you're going through the field and you're looking at your sprayer, your field sprayer, I'm not talking about injecting sprayer, field sprayer, and you're going to look and you're looking at your boom, however, your front boom, rear boom, whatever, and you're looking for the spray patterns to be even, to the fogging, depending upon the nozzle you have, the tip you have on it, to look even. If you see one, pardon my language, pissing, right, instead of atomizing the spray adjuvant or whatever is in there, the chemical, whatever you're putting on the field, all right, you know you have a problem with that, and you're not getting the proper coverage. Well, the same thing is happening with a fuel injector. If you do not have the proper spray pattern coming out of the injector, then you're not going to have even fueling in each cylinder. Then with a port fuel injected engine or a diesel, we're going to discuss that later on, which has fuel delivery that's independent to that cylinder versus something like a carburetor that feeds a plenum and feeds all of the cylinders, is that you're going to have a different air fuel ratio in every cylinder, and that is going to result in a rough idle. Alrighty, so the spray pattern is very important, right? And also the response time of the injector. A fuel injector, electronic fuel injector, has an electromagnet in it, and we discussed this in the relay podcast a few weeks ago about electrical devices. And as that injector gets old from thermal cycles, meaning heat cycles, everything, then magnetics gets weak. And if that magnetics gets weak, that injector doesn't open as quickly and may not also close as quickly as it's supposed to. So it's supposed to open. So it's basically very lazy as far as opening up is concerned, and that is going to impact the fuel delivery on that cylinder. And if it's so, if you have a dirty injector that the pintle is dirty, it's not atomizing properly, and then you also put alongside of it that you have a lazy injector, lazy mechanically, that it's not lifting up. Not lifting up properly, then the fact of the matter is you're going to have cylinder to cylinder air fuel ratio variation, and that is going to result in a rough idle. But also, if you're not atomizing that fuel properly, you are going to eventually wash. If it's spraying in a stream, you're going to wash the oil off of that cylinder wall. And then you're going to wash the oil off, and that means that that ring package and that cylinder wall is going to wear exponentially to the ones that are being atomized properly. And then you're going to end up putting a motor in this thing, because it all showed itself first with a rough idle. And that's why I cannot stress that, you know, you can't close your eyes to these things on the farm. I'm not saying that you make it your life's mission, but you have to be cognizant. And that's why I felt it would bring value to do a show on idle quality, because as I said in the beginning, it's going to be the indicator, it's going to be the predictor of things to come. And you don't want to come to me and say, man, I washed the rings out of this motor, or three cylinders on this motor, this eight cylinder motor, or two cylinders on this six cylinder motor, whatever it may be, and it had a rough idle, and the rough idle was the telltale sign, and I just ignored it because it just ran rough. Who the hell cares? All right. And that's the connection that I'm trying to make here, and that synergy that there is detriment beyond bragging about a smooth idle. All right. So it's going to show you what's going on. So now another thing, we'll go to a carbureted engine, a lot of carbureted engines floating around there yet on the farm, and unbalanced mixture screws on the carburetor. So if the mixture screws are not balanced and one side of the carburetor is delivering this air-fuel ratio and the other side is delivering a different air-fuel ratio, how are you going to have a smooth running engine? You're not going to have a smooth running engine, because you're going to have cylinder-to-cylinder variations in the air-fuel ratio. And most applications that you will find on the farm that still have a carburetor, older trucks, older irrigation engines, what have you, multiple cylinder engines, automotive type of engines, I'm going to call it that way, usually have a dual plane intake manifold. And a dual plane intake manifold means that the left side of the carburetor feeds to, you'll use a V8 as an example, left side of the carburetor feeds two cylinders on the left side and then two cylinders on the right side. So it's like an X. That's how the air fuel ratio is delivered. So if you have a mixture screw that's not balanced properly, you don't have the air fuel ratio adjusted properly in that carburetor, you're going to have, if one side is lean, you'll have four lean cylinders, but two on one side of one bank and two on the other bank. And then if it's rich, you'll have two on one bank and two on the other bank. So a lot of people don't recognize that. And the thing is that you need to realize that you need to have that carburetor adjusted properly for that mixture to be even going to all of those cylinders, and not have rich cylinders and lean cylinders. Lean cylinder, you end up burning a piston. Rich cylinder, you end up washing the oil off the cylinder wall, and you wear the ring package and the bore out at a premature rate. You'd be surprised. Gasoline in there doesn't like gasoline. The next thing we want to discuss and just bring to light here is carbon deposits on the intake valve skews the delivered mixture. And this is for carburetor or for fuel injection, is that if you have carbon deposits on the backside of the intake valve, then that is going to block the airflow, but it's also going to wick in the fuel that is in the air, the homogenized mixture of fuel and air. It's going to wick it in, and specifically at idle, it's going to cause lean conditions, because instead of the fuel getting into the cylinder, to combust, it's going to be wicking in like a sponge in that carbon deposit. And it's also the carbon deposit that's going to block the airflow to that cylinder. So you're going to have a different volumetric efficiency. The amount of air and fuel, what volumetric efficiency really speaks about how much cylinder filler is, how full a cylinder is. So you're going to have one cylinder with this much air and fuel, and another cylinder with a different amount of air and fuel. This one 100%, this one 40%, what have you. And what will happen is that that becomes very, very, very apparent at idle. And then as the idle speed goes up and the air, well, the engine speed goes up and the airflow through the motor increases, what actually happens is that you actually pull some of that wicked in fuel from the carbon deposits, and now the mixture goes rich. So your tooling at idle with a rough idle mixture goes rich, but also because you're not filling the cylinders properly, all right, with air, volumetric efficiency, volume, think of like volume on a sprayer tank, all right, volume, all right, and then you're not giving the proper air fuel mixture, the proper mixture strength. So it's like saying, hey, you know, I put 3 quarts per acre of Acuron that I use in my field. Now, if I have, if I'm putting a half a quart, 1 quart per acre, or 4 quarts per acre, 5 quarts per acre, I'm not going to have the desired results. Same thing happens in an engine. And then carbon deposits on the backside of the valve will make an engine very, very lazy. You'll think it's tired and needs to be rebuilt, but it's all because the carbon deposits are blocking the airflow. It's like choking the motor, but choking it internally, not at the air filter or the carburetor or whatever it may be, however it gets in the air. Another very common cause of a rough idle is variation in valve lash on the cylinders. So if you have a valve that is too tight, then what's basically happening, you're having like an internal EGR, exhaust gas recirculation, coming in there, and you're actually diluting the mixture with exhaust, and it's going to run rough. If it is too loose, then what is going to happen is that you're not going to be lifting the valve as high and as quickly at so many degrees of rotation of the camshaft. The valve is not going to be at the proper height, so you're going to be starving that cylinder, for air and fuel, and it's going to be producing less power. And if it's producing less power, then it's going to have a rough idle. So a lot of these things come into play, is that you don't ignore a rough idle on an engine, say, ah, that's just how bad it is, forget about it, it runs all right when I step on the gas. That is a predictor of things going astray. And if a valve is too tight and you didn't adjust it too tight, then as I did a show on this, that valve is pulling through the cylinder head, and that engine will eventually knock the retainer off the valve spring and drop a valve in the engine. So then again, you know, the rough idle is probably one of the first things that you start to see with that. Next thing, possibility is dripping injectors. So just like a dripping faucet in the sink is concerned, if the injector pintle closes and this is gasoline or diesel and it is not closing properly or sealing properly, then that injector is going to drip fuel into the cylinder. All right, it's going to make the mixture too rich. It's not going to be evenly burnt, and it's going to create a rough idle in that board where it's dripping because you're not having atomized fuel. And lots of times the cylinder may actually act lean, believe it or not, even though it's dripping fuel in, because it's dripping it in instead of spraying. So, but usually the dripping effect will cause a rough idle when it gets very bad, but it will also wash the oil off the cylinder walls and create a lot of carbon. And then touching on again, slow to open and slow to close magnetics, all right, on the injector. It's slow to open, slow to close. It's going to skew the air-fuel ratio. It's not going to be, every cylinder is not going to be open, be skewed the same, and the engine is going to have a rough idle. Now, on a pump line, now everything I've discussed so far, other than the mixture screws, basically pertain to gasoline or diesel. You just have to look at the equivalent thing, on that fuel system. But when it comes to an older diesel, pump line, nozzle diesel, mechanical diesel, there's a setting for the injectors. Some people call them the nozzles, the injectors, whatever you want to call them, all right? And that is the pop-off pressure. And that's the pressure, that needs to be created by the injection pump for that injector to open. And when you set up an injector, when you test mechanical diesel injectors on a test bench, you're supposed to adjust them. Some of them need to be shimmed, some actually have a screw adjustment on there with spring tension, but you want to have the pop-off pressure. So in other words, let's say if it's 2,200 pounds pop-off pressure, you want them all popping off at 2,200 pounds, and then you also want to make sure that they close and do a leak test on it. But we're talking about pop-off. If this one is popping off at 1,500 pounds, this one is popping off at 2,500 pounds, this one is popping off at 2,200 pounds, this one is 2,100 pounds, how the hell are you going to have a smooth idle? Each injector is opening at a different time and a different pressure. And so the thing basically is that that's very common on a older diesel. And that's why you should always have, if you have a diesel that's starting to pump line valves, starting to have a bad idle quality, and or you'll see it starts to haze, some smoke in the exhaust, it's very possible that you have a pop-off problem, that the injectors are not opening at the same pressure and need to be taken apart, cleaned, and to be adjusted. Another possible area is on gasoline and diesel is a leaking EGR valve, exhaust gas recirculation, and we actually have a question about that in special delivery today. But a leaking EGR valve, and a leaking EGR valve will dilute the mixture. And on many engines, is not EGR going to each cylinder. On older engines, on newer engines, they try to get it balanced, but that will cause it to run rough if the EGR valve is leaking. Now, contrary to what people may think, is that the ignition system usually is not a cause of a rough idle unless it's a dead misfire. At the exhaust. And so the thing is that usually it is fuel related, and even, like I say, valve lash could be fuel related because it's affecting the cylinder to cylinder mixture and volumetric efficiency. So contrary to popular belief that most of the time a rough idle is not ignition related unless it has a dead misfire. And that's why you need to listen to the exhaust on a gasoline or diesel. If you hear then that's usually one cylinder. If you have, let's say, a common vacuum leak on a gasoline engine here at the exhaust, if you have one or two cylinders that are lean, of course it has like an intake manifold runner leak or a vacuum hose that went that what, it'll be not as defined as an ignition misfire, let's for instance like a foul plug or a broken ignition wire on a gasoline engine. Same thing with a diesel. If you have a diesel and you have a farty, what I call exhaust, all right, then that's something that's happening that's common, and it's usually, and it can very well be, right, that all the injectors are not firing proper, operating properly, specifically something like on an older power stroke type of system or any type of engine, Caterpillar, that has a Huey injector, because they could be binding from, they could have what they call stiction, and they're sticking on the oil side of the injector. But the thing basically is, what I want you to understand is that you could also have an engine that runs roughly, idles roughly, but is smooth at the tailpipe. So it's quivering, it's shaking, it's doing things, right? But at the tailpipe, it's beautiful, sounds beautiful, like a symphony, right? And when you have an engine, it's like that. My cousin John had a 73 Plymouth Satellite Sebring. It was a nice car with a 318. That would run, we get it to run beautiful at the tailpipe, but it would always be quivering and shaking at idle. And that's an indicator of an out of balance condition in the engine. And it could be the engine, it could be the harmonic dampener. But if you have an engine, gasoline or diesel, and it is smooth at the exhaust, but has a rough idle, a quiver in the idle, or rough idle and smooth at the exhaust, then that is historically an out of balance condition. And the first thing you may want to do is disconnect some of the belts, because you could have, let's say, a power steering pump, or on a big diesel, you could have an air compressor that's going bad, and that's causing a harmonic that you're feeling, and you're identifying it as the engine, but it's not. But so the thing, you want to first listen to the exhaust, you want to define what the exhaust is doing, and then you want to go from there. So So it's very common to have a balance problem, and gives an engine a rough idle, and it gives a quivered idle, and it gets masked at the as engine speed is increased. So hopefully I gave you some. I went through them quickly because I wanted to be able to make this show fit within the time frame. We have still have the toolbox test question to do and a lot of other stuff. So any questions, any concerns, any issues, as I always say, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. So now what we're going to do is going to go into our toolbox test. And we are on test number, let me see, test number three. And we're on question number two. And you know, I wanted to share with you that that the toolbox test, as I always say, is brought to you by Agro Liquid. But even if you're not an Agro Liquid customer, well, I mean, you should be, but even if you're not, all right, then the thing is that, you know, go to their website and contact them because they have an excellent, excellent newsletter. It's educational, all right? It's educational about fertility, about crops, and it comes out four times a year, and it's beautifully done. It's beautiful photography. It's well-written. It's well-crafted. And I just received the winter newsletter the other day, and what they basically did is spoke about in here their mission statement, and I think that every farm, every person in your life should have a, you should have a mission statement for your life. And my mission statement is to be able to be a good steward of what the Lord entrusted to me, and to be able to take care of it the best, and to not waste my time in life. And so that one day when it comes to the day of accountability, that that the Lord on his throne could tell me, well done, good and faithful servant. And my mission statement for this podcast and for my website is to prosper the American farmer and those around the world, to help them realize that agriculture is, you know, it's just as important to have your machinery operating efficiently as it is to have everything else on your farm. It's agronomy, it's marketing, and it's machinery. But what I want to share with you quickly is that what Agro Liquid defined as their core values, and I think that, not I think, I know for a fact that we can apply this to our lives, and also it tells you about the company. And they have one, two, three, four, five core values. And it's to be authentic, to be real, to passionately be engaged, that you want to make it happen. So I always say in this show, I want you to apply what I tell you, what I'm presenting to you. I'm not telling you anything. That you need to be a servant leader, that you need to work as a team and win as a team. You know, today, this world, today, it's all about me. And that's not what it's about. You know, nobody wins the race by themselves, that you work as a team and you win as a team. That you need to be committed to greatness, that you're always aspiring. And I know that that's what I want you to do. And that's what I do in my own life, that you want to, as they say in their core values at Agro Liquid, relentlessly pursue continuous improvement. Good is never good enough. And I want you to do that with your farm, and I'm stealing this from their core values, but I'm in lockstep with them 100%. But this last one really, really resonated with me. It's to be humbly confident. Demonstrate confidence with humility. And in today's world, a company that is humbly confident knows that they have a great product, and they know they can accomplish it, but they don't go around bragging. Everybody goes and toots their own horn today. I'm not that way, and I know the Bancroft family from Agro Liquid is not. So I wanted to share that with you. And those are great values, and they represent not only goals for our life and how to live our life, but they are so indicative of the Agro Liquid brand and what they do, and how they look at fertility, crop fertility. So check it out. Go to their website, sign up for the newsletter. They would love to send it to you. It's great information, and it's great information no matter whose fertilizer you use. But I would hope that you start to read this and look at it, and then realize that that this is a different company than most fertility companies. But hey, you know, we can't have a toolbox test question without Tex Rabinowitz, right? Tex is going to be here, and he's going to be singing for us. He's going to be singing the Hot Rod Man as we get ready. You put your thinking cap on for the toolbox test. Come on, Tex. Come on in for 2020.
Well, I'm a rolling daddy with a mean machine. It's got a V8 motor, and it sure is clean. I'm a Hot Rod Man. Yeah, I'm a Hot Rod Man. Well, look out, little mama, gonna get you if I can.
I don't know if Tex got that Hot Rod Island properly. He should be able to catch that little mama. He's been trying to catch him for years now, so he's probably got a better tune-up than he's got. But thanks so much, Tex. And that is from Ripsaw Records. And you could find Tex Rabinowitz and a bunch of other great, great cutting-edge rock and roll. I call them oldies. Call them what you want on Ripsaw Records, who will soon to be having their new website. And once that does launch, I will let you know about it. So we're on toolbox test number 3, question number 2. And as I always say, don't be concerned with whether it's A, B, C, or D. Be concerned with the answer. Alrighty, you have an old Ford F600 grain body truck that you want to put back into service during harvest to supplement the semis and grain carts. It runs well, but the engine needs to be rebuilt and it would be a good winter project. Your yields have gone up so much that you need more ways to move the grain to keep the combines working. You figured out that this would be the least expensive way to satisfy the need, and you could use the truck for other things. A friend suggested a machine shop in the next county, and you went to talk to him. The shop foreman told you that they would not need to bore the engine, just hone it and fit new rings and bearings. He said that with most engines, if you did not score the cylinder wall, a honed job is all that is required. At first, you are happy to hear this, since the cost would be lower, but it is contrary to what you have heard in the past. You had always believed that a block needs to be bored and then honed. You ask 4 of your friends, and this is what they tell you. Farmer A says that you found an honest machine shop and you should give him your business. Farmer B told you to junk the truck and buy a used one. Farmer C informs you that an engine block is either bored or honed, but never both. And Farmer D tells you to run away from that shop. The proper way to rebuild a worn engine is to bore the cylinder and then hone it to the size of the new piston that will be required. So that is your question. And after we get done with our special delivery letter, we will have the answer for you and get ready to close the show. All righty, you hear my papers shuffling around here. And this letter is from Joe Thomas, and this is from the special delivery section. And he is in California. I do not know where. I have a 1980 Chevy pickup with a 350 engine, and it recently began to run very rough and stall. And, you know, as an aside to this, this letter came in, and he uses the truck, so I wanted to answer it. It has nothing to do with the show we did today. It just happens to be coincidental. After much examination, I unplugged the vacuum line to the EGR valve, and it ran fine, but would ping very badly. I hooked the line back up and it ran rough and stalled but did not ping. Please let me know what you think, because we like the truck even though it is 40 years old and use it for many chores. I am enjoying your show and have begun to explore your website. Great information. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Thomas. And very simply, the reason why it's stalling and running rough and doing everything is that there's a thermal vacuum switch that controls the EGR valve and only allows the EGR to be evoked during when the engine is at fully operating temperature and at par throttle light load. At idle and at full throttle, there would be no EGR. That thermal vacuum switch went bad and is putting a vacuum signal to open the EGR valve at all times, and that's why the engine is running rough and stalling and bucking and doing whatever. And that is why when you disconnect the vacuum hose from the EGR valve, the engine runs fine. And the reason why it pings is because the EGR valve is used, exhaust gas recirculation is used to cool the cylinder at par throttle light load. And the timing curve that is in that distributor is meant to recognize that that inert exhaust gas to cool the cylinder. So what's basically happening is that you're overheating the cylinders, and that is why it is pinging. So I don't want you to ride around like that, because you'll, after 40 years, you'll ping that engine to death and destroy it, which is not good. All right, so what I want you to do is you have to go to town and you have to locate the, we have to buy the a new thermal vacuum switch. It usually sits in the intake manifold in a water jacket near the thermostat. You'll see it'll have at least two lines going into it. One line will be a manifold vacuum source or a ported vacuum source, depending upon how they have the system up, and then it'll have a line going to the EGR valve. So if you follow the EGR valve vacuum hose back to that, you'll get that, you'll identify that that thermal vacuum switch. They're probably about $15 to $20. You'll be able to put that in there, and everything should be 100% fine. Listen, I want to thank you for writing. If you have any questions or run into any obstacles with that, please feel free to contact me at hotrodfarmer@farmmachinerydigest.com. So, and but you'll get that Chevy running for another 40 years, which is great. Love it. Okay, now we get back to our toolbox test question. And Farmer D is correct. With very rare exception, can an engine block only be honed and not bored? A hone is not aggressive enough and will just follow the taper and out of round condition in the cylinder. The boring procedure will cut the cylinder round again and provide the proper clearance between the piston skirt and the cylinder wall. That's identified as piston to wall clearance. When a cylinder is bored oversized pistons are required. If the engine uses sleeves, then the sleeves may or may not have enough material to bore, and if so, they are replaced. If the pistons measure in specification, then they can be reused, but it is not advised. If the cylinder liners are worn, so are the pistons, and the honing procedure is used to bring it to the final dimension and put the all-essential cross hatch on the cylinder wall for the ring package to seal and for oil control. So you need to bore and you need to hone in almost every instance. And that's why Farmer D said run like anything from that machine shop, because you'd spend a lot of money to rebuild that old Ford truck and it would never run right and it would be an oil user. So listen, I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. And I hope that you enjoyed learning about idle quality and the importance of it as a telltale to other things that could happen and possibly impact the life and performance of your engine. And before we exit, I want you to know that the Hot Rod Farmer is pulling for you, to the American farmer and rancher in my beloved, beloved America. So you have a great, great week, and hopefully you will tune in next week. And I'm gonna roll some coal, buddy, and get out of here now. Until next week. Bye-bye.